This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Good morning to you. One of those days that I do not miss from my television days. Cam, I don't know about you, but I can remember one of the coldest broadcasts that I had was one opening day when Channel 4 sent the morning team down to the ballpark and underdressed us.
Wait. They underdressed you, or
well, they bought us stuff to wear, and it wasn't warm enough.
Oh.
So we're down there trying to keep our hands warm. I remember Bill McCormick, our then photographer, and I think now he's the chief engineer over there, taught me this little trick where you can reverse two 9-volt batteries and plug them into each other, and they'll heat up, and you can use them as hand warmers. I don't know how safe that is.
I was going to say, that sounds really dangerous.
When you're really cold and you've got those in your hands, they replace hot pockets. Can I just tell you that?
I don't know if people realize this, but the TV people, when you see them wearing all those branded jackets and branded polos, oh my gosh, the stations were so crazy. Every station I worked at pretty much was like, you have to wear the polo and the jacket and the hat. And if it's raining, you must carry the branded umbrella. You cannot bring your own personal umbrella because it has to look like the station logo threw up all over you. And I'm sorry for eating breakfast.
Well, that's okay. Surprise, surprise. And I don't know that it's still the case because I haven't worked over there in a while.
I bet it is.
It was, generally speaking, the cheapest knockoff stuff they could find that they could get their logo applied
to. On trade.
Probably on trade.
Yeah.
Sometimes it looked okay, but if you were wearing it, you knew the truth. I've still got a few of those items of clothing at home, believe it or not, from over the years. Some big bright yellow Channel 4 raincoat that they gave us at... chief, among other complaints, was not waterproof.
Well, so now they're so cheap, they want you to give it back so that they can just reuse it for all the other reporters. You get a jacket that you could tell had been in the storage closet for 10 years and just passed down from all the other reporters.
Absolutely. Lots for us to get to today. Obviously, it is opening day. We've had Tom Ackerman in here talking about that and what he expects this afternoon from Sonny Gray. You can hit the rewind button on the Odyssey app, or we'll have that up on demand on the podcast shortly if you missed that at about 6:35. Coming up here, we got Jim Talent, the former U.S. Senator who was a candidate for Secretary of Defense. I want to talk to him about, obviously, what I think is a nothing burger, but they continue to harp on it in the national media like it's the worst debacle in the history of foreign relations or national security, I should say, and I don't think that's the case. Ben Brown, the Missouri senator, is going to join me at 7:35. He said that he's got some groundbreaking legislation that if it had passed last year, Amendment 3 would, and maybe the sports betting bill would not have passed in Missouri. And I'm going to let him explain that at about 7:35. So stay tuned for all of that. But right now I want to get to our shortlist, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
So these on-off tariffs, these threats, these bullies are all about trying to soften up what Trump would regard as, what he used to regard as friends, many people now think are more like foes.
Yeah, this is Gillian Tett. She is a British correspondent for like the Financial Times or something, and says the U.S. is being a bully because we want an even trading deal with them. Reciprocal tariffs. You charge us, we charge you exactly the same, and somehow that's being a bully.
this morning, out came something that doesn't look like war plans. And as a matter of fact, they even changed the title to attack plans.
Pete Hegseth still out there defending what happened with the Signal app. And he's like, listen, they keep backing away from the story and all the outrageous allegations that are made. There are still Democrats, including Tammy Duckworth, who want Pete Hegseth to resign or be fired over this nothing burger.
This afternoon, Missouri Governor Mike Kehoe signing a bill giving the state control of the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department.
Yes, indeed. That happened yesterday, long overdue. It's finally happening, and today the governor is going to be in town for a ceremonial signing in front of some St. Louis police officers.
We are not going to be lectured about national security and American troops by Democrats and the mainstream media who turned the other cheek when the Biden administration, because of their incompetence, left 13 service members dead in Afghanistan, and not a single person in the previous administration was held accountable for that.
Yep, Caroline Leavitt reading them the Riot Act yesterday over some of these comments, maybe from Duckworth and others, demanding people be fired and held accountable and hearings and all this stuff. And it was just all orchestrated. The more it becomes more and more obvious every day, the timing of it stinks to high heaven. There's no doubt about that. So what's the media going to do about this, Kim? They're going to keep kicking this dead horse on behalf of their Democrat counterparts. CNN is a great example of it. So I want to play a little bit of this for you. Last night, Doug Collins, who's the secretary of the VA. So this is a guy in charge of Jefferson Barracks and the other VA facilities around the country. And Doug is from Georgia, and he's a very serious guy about helping veterans. I've met him several years ago at CPAC and interviewed him, and he's just a fantastic human being, former congressman. He gets on there with Caitlin Collins yesterday, and right off the bat, she badgers him about this Signal thing, and he kind of warns her, I didn't come on here to talk about that. I don't know anything about it. Listen.
Believe that a mistake was made here, though, to have this conversation, to add a reporter, and to have it on an unsupported, classified group setting.
Caitlin, as I've just told you, I've just answered the question. I wasn't part of it, and I'm not going to speculate more than what the president's already talked about, and those who've been involved have talked about. But we'd love to talk about the veterans.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about it anymore. So he says that to her, and of course, that's not good enough for Caitlin Collins. And this is kind of long, but you got to hear it because Doug Collins just read her the Riot Act. Listen.
Yeah, and I do have questions about the veterans, but given what we saw with the group chat and how this was used, you are a member of the cabinet. You obviously know these other members, several of them who were in there. Is this typical for the cabinet to have conversations over Signal? Is this something that you use?
Well, Caitlin, Senator, you undoubtedly do not want to talk about the VA. I have a question. As VA Secretary, his cabinet, I want to ask you, because I've been curious about this, because my job is to take care of veterans, and I would like to know why CNN is hostile to veterans, especially one in Florida, where you just had a $5 million defamation suit, taking offense at a veteran who was trying to help people. In fact, one of your employees actually said, we're going to nail him. I have a question for you, Caitlin. Is that employee still employed? Are you really concerned about veterans? So if we don't want to talk about veterans now, you want to talk about everything else, I'd like to hear from CNN as the veteran cabinet secretary why CNN seems to have a problem with veterans.
Well, Mr. Secretary, respectfully, my question was about whether or not you as a member of the cabinet use this. And respectfully, I'm conducting the investigation. And I do have a lot of questions for you on Veterans Affairs. But I don't think it would be unwarranted to ask.
What you want to do is talk about the subject.
And it just went on. She would not back off, and neither would Doug Collins. He gave her some hell, and I was glad to hear that.
The way these lawmakers are willing to push back on these members of the media, it's pretty fun to watch. And I don't remember seeing this until Trump took office, and we saw the bias. And finally, everyone's like, you know what? If you're going to ask us these ridiculous questions, we're going to push back and call you out on your nonsense.
I've made it pretty clear. I don't know anything about that. Why do you keep badgering me about it? Is the Bottom line, for sure. Coming up, we'll find out what former Senator Jim Talent thinks about all of this. Was it really the foreign policy debacle of the decade, of the generation, of the history of the United States, as Tammy Duckworth and Mark Warner and all of them would have you believe? I don't think so. We'll see what Jim thinks coming up.
As I said to this group a couple of times on this trip now, as we move to the Indo-Pacific to do our job, which is what we're here to do, nobody's texting war plans. Well, I noticed this morning out came something that doesn't look like war plans. And as a matter of fact, they even changed the title to attack plans because they know it's not war plans. There's no units, no locations, no routes, no flight paths, no sources, no methods, no classified information.
All right, we got former Senator Jim Talent on the line this morning with us. Jim, how are you?
Doing well.
I'm doing fine, thank you. Good to have you on this morning. That was Pete Hegseth explaining again what happened in this signal communication that somehow ended up with a reporter from The Atlantic. They're describing it very much as a nothing to see here kind of thing. They're not sure. I guess the key question for me is, how did the reporter's number get on there? Because I've accidentally texted people before, but you have to have the number in the first place for that to happen.
Yeah. I mean, you put your finger on the one clear mistake in this, was that a person was included in the chat who should not have been in the chat. Now, because it's a reporter, we found out about it, but it would have been bad if it was anybody. I mean, look, if they'd included me in the chat, what am I doing listening to this discussion? Mark, when I first heard about it, I thought, well, this is a problem because I assumed that they were not supposed to be using Signal to do government business. When I found out that, in fact, that's what the government anticipates, in other words, Signal's been built into the system and they are supposed to be using it, then the problem mostly goes away and this becomes a flap because there was a mistake, a reporter was included, and because whatever we think about what the mission information related to that part of the chat, I'm guessing Pete Hegseth would like to have back if he could do it. He basically gave them information about 2 hours before he should have. Now, the mission went off well. The team functioned well. I like the fact that they're obviously functioning as a team, that they're talking, they're sharing information, they feel free to raise points. That's not always the case, you know. And it's very important when the principals seem to think of each other as friends. Well, but I think this is mostly a flap and it'll go away.
Well, all these Democrats who are calling for some of these people like Pete Hegseth to resign, what do you make of that? I mean, what do you think should be done, if anything, about this?
Yeah, well, I dismissed that idea. Even on the first discussion I had about or interview I did with it, I said, well, that's ridiculous. Even when I thought that maybe they shouldn't have been using Signal. Look, what they're doing in these areas is really, really important. It's good to it's very important to have good people who can execute. And if you're the president and you think these are good people who are executing the missions, who are assisting me in devising policy, you know, who are reliable and carrying out what I tell them to do, you're not going to fire them because of a mistake. I mean, it would be against the public interest to do that. You don't want to, you know, change your whole team or remove key players because of one problem. And Trump immediately said, no, I'm not doing that, which is the right thing.
You know,
now,
it's
over time, he concludes that they're not any good, he's going to get rid of them. That's what he should do.
It surprised me a bit that, I mean, Kim was familiar with Signal. I was not. I know they approved it for use during the Biden administration. If there's any change to policies, that they either don't use that or they use something more secure next time.
Yeah, well, when I got into it, Mark, and I talked to a few people, the problem is the government does not have a secure system for doing this kind of thing. I mean, obviously the government has like secure email systems. So the question becomes, do we accept the risk in order to facilitate important group conversations like this? And I think they're going to. I think they're going to examine that and see what their other alternatives are. But I mean, it's a policy decision that the Biden administration made, I presume, after considering the alternatives. So The point is, I mean, they were doing, the fact they were having this chat and talking about all these issues is something they were supposed to be doing. So you can see how that's like 80% of what I thought was the problem, and now it just goes away.
Yeah, it's a great point, and I appreciate you making it. Jim, we're out of time, my friend. Thank you.
Good talking to you guys.
Always. Thank you. Great to get him on here. Yeah, that's the thing. The guy they're all, the Democrats are complaining about the most, Elon Musk, who designed PayPal and Tesla and sends people to the space station and rescues them, and who's brilliant, I'm certain could come up with a communication system that was secure we could use within the government. This is not going to be that difficult to fix, if indeed that is the problem. Coming up, we'll get to Missouri Senator Ben Brown. He's got a couple of key pieces of legislation on self-defense and maybe IP reform. Stay tuned.
This afternoon, Missouri Governor Mike Kehoe signing a bill giving the state control of the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department.
Yeah, there you have it. That happened yesterday. Governor's in town today, and he's going to do a ceremonial signing at, I believe, the police FOP lodge downtown this morning. And that is a big relief when it comes to the ability to fight crime, the ability to have proper staffing, all of that here in town. But, you know, if you're an individual and you believe in self-defense, I think back to the Mark McCloskey case. And if somebody, I've said at the time, if I lived on a private street, which I never will, somebody kicked in my gate and came, a crowd, an angry crowd, and came trotting up my street, I might very well walk into my front yard with a sidearm as well. But Mark McCloskey got taken to court and raked over the coals for it when it should have been a simple case of self-defense. Nobody got shot. To begin with, Senator Ben Brown is working on a bill that would do just that, SB 363, I think it's called. Senator, welcome back.
Hey, Mark. Great to be on. Beautiful day here at the Capitol, I'll tell you what.
Well, I'm glad you could give me a little bit of time on this this morning because, you know, the Post-Dispatch hates this idea that you would put somebody's self-defense rights first.
Yeah, and generally when Post-Dispatch writes a bad article about me, that's generally an indication that I must be doing something right.
You're over the target, so to speak. tell us about SB 363.
So, yeah, Missouri SB 3, it's an enhanced stand your ground law. In Missouri, it has a version of stand your ground law that has been in place since 2016. However, compared to the version of this that's been passed in nearly 20 other states, unfortunately, ours just falls very short. And the issue with our law is rather than being presumed innocent until proven guilty, as you typically would in other areas of law, the opposite is in fact true. Moreover, Missouri gun owners can be arrested following a threatened or actual shooting, even in cases of self-defense, without so much as probable cause that a crime was committed. And so I felt that this flies in the face of really one of our country's founding principles, the presumption of innocence, which is a cornerstone of our system of justice and a right that has been enshrined in the United States Constitution. The Fifth Amendment was guaranteed that every person accused of a crime is considered innocent until proven guilty, and that the burden of proof rests on the prosecution to demonstrate guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. I believe that that applies to people using firearms in cases of self-defense as well. And so I filed this bill to ensure just that.
So this would essentially block the prosecution of people who feel like reasonably that they used, you know, self-defense, right? Is that kind of what this does?
I wouldn't say it blocks all prosecution because the person felt, but it gives them a presumption of reasonableness.
Okay.
So and instead of where it is right now to where you're guilty unless you can prove it was self-defense, which it's completely reversed of how our system of justice is intended to operate, because then you're presumed guilty and you have to prove yourself innocent. It flips that.
So
you will have that presumption of reasonableness that you acted in a reasonable manner, assuming that you were your life, that you were in danger, and then it would be completely on the prosecution. So your self-defense claim would stand unless they could prove you otherwise. It also would prevent you from simply being taken in. You know, right now, someone breaks into your house and you're put in that unfortunate position where you have no other choice but to use a firearm to defend the lives of yourself and your family, like, they can still take you in without probable cause that it wasn't self-defense. This would end that.
Wow.
And you would have the presumption of self-defense until they could prove otherwise and find that probable cause.
I love the bill. Where is it making ground? Are you out of committee on it?
We just had the first committee hearing earlier this week. So I'm optimistic that it will be voted out of committee next week and placed in the formal calendar and, you know, get our place in line to bring it to the floor for formal debate.
That's outstanding. Yeah, you also told me when we chatted the other day by text that you have another bill that you're introducing that might have, I don't know, we didn't get IP reform passed, but had this bill been in effect, it might have had the impact of initiative petition reform.
Yes, and this bill, fortunately, is much further along. We actually just perfected this bill yesterday. It will be voted out of the Senate today. And I don't think I'm overstating this when I say this is the most impactful piece of legislation that I've been able to advance in my years spent here in the Missouri Senate. What this bill does, it solves a major problem. What we have now, you have things like Amendment 3 being put in our Constitution, and sure, like doing a concurrent majority system would help with that. But I actually believe this is more impactful. The only reason Amendment 3 and these other things get onto our Constitution is because of this loophole that's being exploited by these foreign billionaires who can funnel hundreds of millions of dollars in the PACs and committees. The money is then used to exploit our initiative petition process, as well as in other states, to essentially purchase constitutional amendments. And one of the main special interest groups behind this has been a group called the 1630 Fund. And this group alone, over the last 10 years, has spent over $100 million bankrolling ballot measures in over 25 states. Missouri, among all 50 states, ranks number 3 in terms of most foreign money coming in to influence our initiative petition process. And according to MEC filings, so we were already ranked number 3, and according to MEC filings, this group contributed over $7.5 million just since May of last year, the different groups that were pushing Amendment 3, Proposition A, all these groups. And we saw how close the vote was on Amendment 3. Now, subtract the millions and millions of dollars that this group and other groups that are all being funded by foreign sources, you take them out of the equation and none of that passes. 1630 Fund, they're being funded. Their primary funder is a Swiss billionaire by the name of Hans-Jörg Wiese. And this guy is stated publicly has no interest in being an American citizen.
Right.
And even in a biography written by his own sister, he was quoted as saying that his life's goal was to, quote unquote, reinterpret the American Constitution in the light of progressive politics.
It sounds like George Soros, a twin of George Soros.
His Swiss twin, I guess you could say.
Yeah, no kidding. So this one. Do you have somebody who's going to be leading it on the House side? And what do you think the prospects are? As the governor said, he would sign something like this.
I think the governor would be in full support. I teamed up with my old partner on. As you know, I was the legislator that filed what became Amendment 7. That prohibited non-citizens from voting in our elections.
Yes.
And bans the scheme of ranked choice voting. One of my real missions in my time in the legislature was to do everything I can to ensure that Missouri is among the top leaders in the nation in terms of election integrity. Amendment 7 was a good step towards that, but passing Senate Bill 152, this is going to be bigger than anything I could have imagined accomplishing. I couldn't have been more honored to get this win in the Senate for the people of Missouri just this week. And I've spoken to the speaker on the House side. He's very supportive. And Ben Baker, representative in the House, we've worked together in the past. We've been coordinated all along. Whenever I have to make an update to the Senate version, he's been making sure that the House version is reflective of that to expedite the process as soon as possible. And I was assured that this bill will be advancing in the House. And good. So I feel very good at the prospects. And this is one of the biggest things we can do to secure our elections. Like this, you know, IP reform has been one of my top priorities for going on two sessions now. That was one of the biggest disappointments of my career when that didn't get over the finish line. This is really a different take at IP reform, and I think it's probably the most impactful approach that we could get across the finish line.
Well, keep me updated on that, and I will let my listeners know when and if we can get that thing passed out of the House. I appreciate it. Senator Brown, thank you, my friend.
Always a pleasure, Mark. Take care.
You bet. Good talking to you, Senator Ben Brown there from District 26. That would be huge. Think about it. You know, I'm sitting here every morning during the pre-election watching these ridiculous ads. Some of them aired on this station. Some of them aired on other stations. And obviously they blanketed the TV airwaves mm-hmm. with these lies, and many times sponsored by outside money
right.
about Amendment 3 and how it was health care for women and all these lies. And if they hadn't had the money to do that, then maybe not as many people would have mm-hmm. been fooled by it. Right.
I can't believe outside money, these organizations are even able to pour money into our elections. That's ridiculous to me. But yeah, this is an important piece of legislation.
I've suggested maybe a companion piece of that legislation would be to also ban any contributions from outside the state of Missouri. Now, the lobbyists mm-hmm. would fight tooth and nail against that. But why should donations from Virginia be able to pour in a lot of the area around D.C.? Millions of dollars were poured into Missouri elections mm-hmm. for issues that are not in the best interest of Missourians from other states. We ought to stop that.
I agree.
The money should come from Missouri.
The only thing that scares me is we should still pass this bill, but the thing that scares me is they're so sneaky, they'll find a way to go around that.
I know.
They'll change the address, change something, so it's like, well, actually, we're here in Missouri, but it's actually coming from, like you said, the D.C. area.
We'll keep you up to date on that. What are we talking about with Kim on a Whim?
Lots of businesses trying to fill job openings, struggling, and some Republican Florida lawmakers getting some pushback on an idea they have to try to fill those positions.
Kim on a Whim.
Well, a lot of businesses have some job openings, and now that there's a crackdown on illegals, maybe there will be even more job openings. And so some Florida lawmakers are considering a bill that would essentially ease some of the child labor laws. What it would do is it would eliminate the work hour restrictions specifically for 16 and 17-year-olds, and it would also ease the restrictions on 14 and 15-year-olds who are either homeschooled or in virtual school. Because right now, under current law, the 16 and 17-year-olds cannot work more than 30 hours a week when school's in session unless a parent, guardian, or superintendent grants a waiver, and they also can't work past 11 p.m. on school nights or more than 8 hours in a day. So I guess they're trying to fill these positions, and this is one idea they have, and people are saying, you are going to push kids into child slavery, and you know, you're going to make these kids feel like they have to work this rigorous schedule, and they won't be able to keep up with school, and they'll drop out, and the world is doomed.
It's not easy to get kids to work to begin with. I have a hard time believing they will, on their own, want to work a 40-hour work week to begin with. But if they do, it's probably because they need the money, or their family needs the money, or they're saving money to pay for this ridiculous cost of college these days. Mm-hmm. I just don't understand what the alarm is. Florida's got to be one of the least unionized states in America, I would think. It's got to be near the top somewhere. So if it's not the unions that are opposed to this, who's so worried about it?
It's so they're saying that it increases the risk of exploitation for our most vulnerable populations. It's kind of like the abortion debate where they're like, well, but like rape and incest. And it's like that is such a small portion of the people who are actually going in there for an abortion. It's like this, where the majority of those teens would probably want to work or need to work. They're paying for college or saving up for something that they really want, a car. But maybe there's like 0.1% of crazy parents that would force their children to try to get a job that would work all these, you know, ridiculous hours. I mean, like you said, they have a choice.
They don't have to work, and many of them won't. Exactly.
I
think that's a fantastic idea there in the state of Florida. Hard enough to get people to, you know, bus dishes at a restaurant. That's a perfect job for a 15-year-old, I think. All right, coming up, we've got Shannon Bream, host of Fox News Sunday. Of course, the Signal debate continues. We'll kick that around with Shannon and some of the legal decisions out of the Supreme Court. We'll be right back.
Get more at 971talk.com.